The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to the Contrarian Investor Podcast. We give voice to those who challenge a prevailing sentiment in global financial markets. This podcast is for informational purposes only. Nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice. Guests were not compensated for their appearance, nor do they supply payment in order to appear. Individuals on this podcast may hold positions in the securities that are discussed. Listeners are urged to educate themselves and make their own decisions. Now, here's your host, Mr. Nathaniel E. Baker.
Jonathan Boyer, principal of Boyer Value Group. Thanks so much for coming on to the show. You are here today specifically because of your view on owning sports teams. And you have a bunch of other views and other investments that we can talk about later. But the contrarian part of right now, your views, is this angle about sports teams. Because if you look at sports team ownership historically, this has been basically a playground for very rich, almost all white men to own these franchises, and basically kind of as a PR thing, as a way to further their profile in the community and nationally. And it was not seen as necessarily something, or not at all seen as something that investors, especially retail investors, would want to take advantage of. And even if they could, there wasn't really a way to. Historically. Now, you do have some publicly traded sports teams, especially in Europe. I don't think that's what we're going to talk about today, though, because I think that your views are how to access this, I guess, asset class with U.S. traded securities. And the last thing that makes this contrarian in this at this time specifically is the COVID crisis and the fact that sports teams throughout the world have been shut down for 3 months and change. With a few exceptions, I believe Belarus and Taiwan's basketball league and a couple of others. But the point is that right now, there's not much happening in terms of returns from an investment in sports teams. And as we go a little further with this, I believe your views are specific to baseball. And baseball has been a league, the Major League Baseball in the U.S., that has been particularly, I want to say, you know, I guess, hard hit by this COVID crisis, which has coincided with the start of their season. And it seems they really kind of blew it here in terms of PR. And finally, I think just this week now have kind of agreed, for lack of a better term, on playing a short season, which may be subject to appeal. I don't know. Maybe you can talk more about that. But anyway, all that long-winded stuff out of the way, you like sports teams as investments here in the U.S. So talk to me about why.
Well, first, thanks for having me on the show. And I do like certain sports teams as investments. I think some could be great investments. Some could be horrible ones. They're really two in particular right now that I think are interesting. One's a professional baseball team and one's a professional basketball and hockey team are kind of where what gets us excited. And if you look at the history of publicly traded sports teams, they don't really stay public for very long. Mm. You have way back either in the 80s or 90s, the Boston Celtics was a publicly traded team that went private. Same thing with the Cleveland Indians. So these are vehicles that, because of just the way they're structured and for various other reasons, aren't really meant to be in the public arena. But when they do, and if you can get them at attractive valuations, it's something that excites us. And, you know, we're big believers in asset values and looking for investments and looking at just really valuable assets. And I think, you know, professional sports teams, especially in major markets like New York and Atlanta, they can be very valuable assets to own because, one, there's not that many of them. There's a finite supply, and they don't come up for sale very often. And that could lead for opportunities. Mm. So it's a long way of saying, yes, for certain sports teams, we find them to be very attractive.
Okay, cool. And the one in New York, which I believe is MSGS and MSGE, the Rangers and the Knicks, right?
Was exactly.
That, yeah, which you spoke about at length, shameless plug, on the Contrarian Investor virtual conference earlier this month. And there's a presentation on that as well as the video that we did that is available. I'll post those links. So let's not get into that, especially just because as a Knicks fan, it's a little painful. But let's talk to me about this the baseball idea.
Yeah, well, the baseball idea is Liberty Braves. Mm-hmm. It's a company that's controlled by John Malone. John Malone, we like to have owners who are great partners. And we think if you look at his record over a long period of time, he's been a fantastic person to invest alongside of. You know, the returns, like anyone who's a great investor, have been lumpy. But he's someone who we think is a great capital allocator. And he's has as a tracking stock, so it gets a little dicey. Mm. You don't actually own the team. It's kind of a convoluted ownership structure, but essentially it tracks the performance of the profits of the baseball team. And Liberty Braves is more than just a baseball team. They own the development around called the Battery in Atlanta, which we think is extremely valuable as well. So you're not only buying a valuable sports team, you're also buying a real estate development. And I think at some point in time, that will be sold. Not only the development, but also the sports team, and John Malone will do it in a tax efficient way. It's something that we're excited about. Obviously, because of COVID, the stock has gone down from, you know, $29-$30 a share to $19 or $20. So you're getting an opportunity to buy something at a discount. I think the enterprise value of the entire team, including the real estate, is about $1.2 billion. Mm-hmm. And we think if there was a sale, we would get, you know, significantly more. We think roughly around $40 a share. So it's a double from here.
Wow. Okay. That's certainly bullish. Why now? And, you know, we touched on it. Baseball is going to play a shortened season, which will not even, there won't be even be any home games anywhere. I don't think. Right. So when there probably won't be profits right until 2021, or are there other ways that for this to be monetized?
Yeah, I mean, this is not a stock that you're buying for a dividend. That it doesn't pay a dividend. It doesn't, right. You know, I think it's why now is because you're at a point of maximum pessimism.
Right.
I'm very disappointed, you know, what Major League Baseball, the Players Association, and the owners have done. It's amazing that a bunch of billionaires and millionaires couldn't compromise to play baseball. And now you have this abbreviated season. But our, you know, part of our thesis is there's a finite number of baseball teams. There's a finite number of baseball teams in major markets. And sooner or later, you know, Dr. Malone isn't buying this. You mentioned earlier that people buy these kind of for trophy assets.
Yeah.
He didn't buy it as a trophy asset. I believe it was part of a stock swap with Time Warner, I think, a long time ago. Uh-huh. And Turner Broadcasting owned the Braves. He's not an emotional owner. The right price, he'll sell it. And right now, as a minority shareholder, you have the opportunity to buy stock at a discount. And, sure. You know, you don't want to buy things when things are rosy. You want to buy things when they look bleak. But my assumption, and it's critically important, is that at some point in time, this virus goes away and life becomes back to normal. And maybe it's not this season, but next season there's a longer regular baseball season with fans in the stands.
What do you know about the real estate portfolio? You touched on it. What types of, is it just land? Are there built? What kind of stuff is that?
There's a couple phases of development. They own a hotel. It's called the Battery in downtown Atlanta. A lot of nightlife. Obviously, the hotel occupancy, I'm sure, is over the last month, a couple months have been terrible. But it's part of a kind of a virtuous cycle where people are, they go to the games and they're down there. It helps with the restaurants, et cetera. So having a baseball stadium there is kind of key to that thesis. But it's a valuable real estate development that people really aren't giving them credit for. They also have office buildings with pretty good tenants in there as well. So it's a great investment in its own right, but because it's a tracking stock, because it's not particularly well followed, it's just not valued correctly.
Mm-hmm. Are you at all concerned, I guess as a shareholder, a minority shareholder of a baseball team, that baseball is kind of facing secular headwinds? We see it a lot how, basketball has gained in popularity. Football has been very, very popular. And baseball is a bit slower, and the games take a lot longer. And maybe as a result, the interest in it, especially among younger people, has dropped off a bit, at least to some of these surveys and polls that I've seen. So is there any concern there at all that it might be facing secular headwinds from that perspective?
Cyclical, for sure. Secular, it's been America's pastime. I don't know if you watched the Michael Jordan documentary on Disney. I highly recommend it if you didn't. When he came in the league, the NBA was in the doldrums. I think these things are cyclical. Baseball is certainly not helping itself. They had a great opportunity to come out as heroes, to be the first sport, really, truly America's pastime, to come out and play. They missed that over squandering, over money. It could be messy for a couple of years, but I still think, a rich person who has the opportunity to buy a baseball team is going to want to do it because it's the ultimate trophy. And I want to stress, not all of our investments are based on this. This is kind of a unique way of looking at it, but we like, when there's finite assets on something, it's something we're attracted to. The fact that it's a tracking stock does complicate things a little bit. And tracking stocks traditionally get sold at a discount, deservedly so, because you don't actually own the underlying assets. Mm. But in a situation where you have someone like John Malone, who's a pretty trustworthy guy who has a reputation to uphold, that you can be confident that he'll do the right thing by shareholders.
Okay, fair enough. Do you have any thoughts on these other sports teams that trade publicly internationally? Soccer specifically, I think Manchester United trades in the UK. I believe Dortmund in Germany. Do you know anything about those? Do you have any thoughts about those or not so much?
People have suggested them as to look into them as investments because they know we've been somewhat public with our MSG and Liberty Braves. But I haven't looked at them. I don't know kind of the economics with, the sports media rights. One thing actually I should mention about Liberty Braves, and I know not to mention MSG because, you're sensitive about
it. You can mention it.
About the Knicks. Is sports gambling.
Oh, yes.
And that is a great opportunity. I mean, Mark Cuban, the day, the Supreme Court ruled, in favor of, legalized mobile sports gambling, said the value of sports teams have doubled overnight. you know, clearly he is not a unbiased person there, but there's so many different ways that they could be monetized, both in the stadium, outside the stadium. It also will, you know, help with people watching it on television. There's just so many different ways. And unfortunately, due to COVID, state budget coffers are a mess. And, you know, two of the ways that I think that they're going to, try and raise money is cannabis and legalized sports gambling. I don't really have any cannabis stocks to discuss.
Good.
But I think these are ways to play that trend in some way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm. And that exists in the UK already. If you've ever been to a soccer match in Premier League or whatever, they have little booths in there where you can go and get one of these betting slips. I've done it. Can I admit that I've done it? I guess I can, right?
You were there.
In the UK. Yeah. I mean, I literally like wagering like, you know, £3 or something. I think like it's like 10 pence is like the minimum. Like, and you can do all these wagers and then you can get cashed out, I think, at the end of it. Or maybe they make you wait. I can't remember. But that's a good way to good place for us to take a short break. Sure. And we'll come right back. And I want to ask you some more questions about other things as well. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
You are listening to the Contrarian Investor Podcast. We are on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and other platforms where podcasts are found. Subscribe and supply an honest rating. We are on social media. Search for Contrarian Investor Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. You can find us on LinkedIn as well. Go to linkedin.com/contrarianpodcast. We want to hear from our listeners. Email your thoughts to feedback@contrarianpod.com. A repository of all podcast episodes and materials is available on our website, contrarianpod.com. Now, back to the program. Here's Mr. Baker.
Okay, welcome back. We are back. Jonathan Boyer of Boyer Value Group. This is the segment of the show where we get to know our guests a little bit better. And I generally ask the guests about their background, how they came to be investing, and other things of that nature. And with you, obviously, your name is literally on the door, as it were.
My name is, I guess, on the door, but you know, the office is closed for the time being due to COVID. Listen, my father started the business in 1975 as a research boutique, and it's kind of morphed over time because he developed a good reputation in the value community. He started managing money for high net worth individuals and pension funds, et cetera. And we never really marketed, keep a relatively low profile on the sales and marketing side, and just kind of grow via word of mouth and now going on podcasts like yours, et cetera. Cool. Our focus really is on investing and not asset gathering. I came kind of a somewhat unique route. I started my career working for Mario Gabelli at Gamco, which was certainly an interesting place to work. Really bright guy, and I learned a lot. Decided I wanted to be a litigator, so I went to law school after that. Did that for a few years. I was doing medical malpractice defense work. The problem with that is the only way to make a decent living is to be a plaintiff's attorney, and I didn't really have any problem with that. I mean, there's good plaintiff's attorneys, there's good defense attorneys, but I happen to have been engaged to a doctor. So that wouldn't have led to a kind of a happy marriage, right? suing their friends. And I've always loved investing. And it was around 2008. And I just saw an opportunity. You know, the market was just getting destroyed. I thought it was just a great time. And I decided to join my father, Mark. He very reluctantly brought me in. He didn't want me to join the business, but I kind of made the case why I should. And, you know, I've been working there ever since. And it's great. I love it. I mean, it's to me, it's one of the best jobs you can have. I get paid to read. I get to pay to learn about businesses and how things work. And I realize how lucky I am.
Mm-hmm. And the Boyer Value Group, is there a value tint to your investing style, or how do you go about doing it?
Yeah, I mean, we consider ourselves, you know, value is such a broad term. I mean, you have these deep value folks who are looking at these horrible businesses selling at 2x earnings, and then you have someone like Warren Buffett who likes to buy great businesses at reasonable prices. We consider ourselves opportunists. You know, we'll find situations, you know, small micro cap situations, you know, $60, $70, $100 million that are good businesses that are totally under the radar, or companies like CVS or Berkshire Hathaway or Bank of America. It just doesn't matter, as long as, you know, two things. One, it's selling significantly below what we think the company is worth. And two, there's a catalyst. Why is the stock going to ascend in value kind of over a reasonable period of time? Okay. And those are the two things that we really look for. And I guess the way we've changed, you know, when my dad started the business in the 70s and it was a function of the time, there was a ton of deep value situations, you know, businesses selling at 1 or 2x earnings, some that were selling below their cash and equivalents in the balance sheet because of computers, because of screens, all of that. That doesn't exist anymore. So you have to just be creative and find your own value. And some of the names that we do don't screen cheap. You know, one of the names that we recently profiled and, you know, own in accounts is Twitter, which I wouldn't say is a value name. I don't have the multiple in front of me, but it wouldn't be on a quote unquote value screen. But it has, like when we looked at eBay originally, when it had PayPal, has this great network effect. It's not monetizing its user base the way Facebook does. I mean, it's just a tremendous opportunity. There's a catalyst because you have you know, an activist involved as well as Silver Lake. So lots of things that can go right, and you have some kind of, you know, downside protection, because I think at some point in time, if we got cheap enough, someone would go and buy the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. The catalyst angle is interesting, and that's one that a lot of seems to be missing from a lot of value, you know, theses, which then results in the investor, you know, screaming and crying about how the stock isn't appreciating, but there's nothing to unlock it, right? So that is a important thing. What are some ideas of catalysts that investors might look for? You mentioned activist investors that oftentimes gets priced in pretty quick, depending on how prominent the investor is.
Well, so. Yeah, no, I mean, there's lots of different catalysts. Could they spin out a division?
Uh-huh.
Could they buy back a lot of stock? Is it mismanaged with a potential to be better managed? Could they leverage the balance sheet? I mean, there's just so many different things. You know, what my dad kind of has instilled in me is, tell me a story. Why is this stock going to go up over a reasonable period of time? And the biggest problem I think value investors face is value traps.
Yeah.
Oftentimes they're not wrong about a stock, that they, you know, most of the time, a lot of times it just languishes because they don't look at that. I mean, like something like Tootsie Roll has been a value stock for like 30 years and, you know, there's no... Yeah, maybe it's done well over the last couple of years. I don't know, but I remember that's been on like different value screens forever. So you have to find, you know, in order to get that good return on investment, you have to find out, you know, find something that's going to make the stock ascend in value. And I think it's critically important. I'm not looking for this to happen in 6 months or 9 months, 2, 3, 4 years down the line. These things could unfold. We're patient. You know, Barron's once called my father, Mark, the world's most patient investor. I'm not as patient as he is, but I'm pretty patient. And you just have to have the luxury of time. And I think that gives us our biggest advantage, is we're fortunate to have this great investor base that allows us to find these situations and let things mature over time and not looking for instant gratification.
What can you talk about the rest of your portfolio and the types of things that, like, how and do you have a separate bond book? Do you have or is this just stocks that you manage for now?
Yeah, we're opportunists. So if there was good credit, you know, maybe we would look at it. But there hasn't been good credit since, you know, at least in our opinion, for like a decade.
Yeah.
You know, just with the interest rate environment we're in. our book looks very different than the S&P. You know, we do not, you know, I think 27% of the S&P is technology stocks. We, you know, to our detriment recently, you know, we don't try and say, hey, let's try and slightly over or underweight benchmark. You know, we just look for good stocks. You know, we're not going to put 100% in financials, but we're certainly not going to say, oh, they're only 12% or whatever they are of the index. We only can have that in our portfolio. So the portfolio has a lot of consumer-oriented names. We like brands. We're really attracted to great consumer franchises, especially when they're masked by a corporate name. Believe it or not, that leads to valuation discrepancy. You know, for example, a couple of years ago, we wrote up and bought a company, Acushnet. I don't know if the name means anything to you.
Is that grocery? No.
They own Titleist golf balls.
Okay, so I had no idea what. Okay.
So that's the exact same. Most people will look at it and probably, you know, not know what it is, and kind of, you know, might not even look to invest in it. Sounds really simplistic. But that was one of the things that attracted to us, that it was this great name, and it's actually done quite well in the COVID environment because it's one of the few things people can do.
Yeah.
is play golf.
Right.
And so yeah, so things like that. You know, I remember, you know, growing up hearing, you know, Stokely Van Camp. You know, my dad used to tell the story. You know, Stokely Van Camp's a great company, but, you know, he wasn't buying it because it owned baked beans. He was buying it because it owned Gatorade. And Gatorade at the time was worth more than the entire market cap of the company. And they ended up selling it, I believe, to Quaker Oats, who then sold it to Pepsi.
Right.
So you look for these anomalies, these situations, and you just have to be able to act and act quickly.
Huh. Are there other examples of, I'm curious about the rest of your book. what else you hold?
Well, it's something like now that it's been a poor performer of late, but I think is interesting is Hanes Brands.
Okay.
Which, you know, most people think it's just Hanes, you know, the underwear, which is a good business actually, but they own Champion, which has had a resurgence and is growing like a weed, even in this environment.
Really?
So, you have to kind of just dig under the surface, and you know, we don't try and own 100 stocks. We try to own 20, 30, 40 names, know them really well, and hold on to them. I think what distinguishes us from most other managers, you know, most of our clients are U.S. Taxpayers, is that we hold these things forever. So it's to us, it's not what you make, it's what you keep.
Mm.
And so we let the, you know, the magic of tax-free compounding work. So we're not going to sell something simply because it goes up. We're going to sell something because it's gotten to a point where it's so blatantly overvalued that it's worth it to take the tax hit and sell.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Interesting. Talk to me about the Hanes brand. I mean, so Champion, what's happened there?
Well, they own Maiden Form, Wonder Bra. They own a whole bunch of things. And, you know, they've struggled in the sense that they've had trouble. You know, it used to be you go to Target or Walmart or wherever, and they have that center aisle. You buy your underwear, you throw it in. You know, less people are you know, shopping at those stores. So they're trying to navigate that, you know, that environment. And they're not losing market share. It's just they're just trying to figure out the best way to market online. And
okay.
You know, they'll figure that out. And you know, to us, if a stock languishes for a long period of time, someone will buy them because they're a great brand. And people say, oh, Amazon Basics or something like that is going to disintermediate them or, you know, replace them. But the studies have shown the closer you get to the skin, the more likely someone is not going to want a kind of a private label brand for them. So we think there's room for them to exist in this world. And it's, you know, it's only a few billion dollar market, you know, enterprise value company to begin with. So another large company like a VF or whatever could buy them, but it's an interesting situation.
Very interesting. All right, cool. Maybe in closing, you tell the listeners of how they can find more about you. You are pretty active on Twitter. What's the handle there?
It's at Boyer, B-O-Y-A-R, Value, at Boyer Value. Mm-hmm. Or just go to our website, BoyerValueGroup.com, and you can find us. And we'd love to talk to you, how we can help you. And but, thank you for having me on the show. This was great, and I really enjoyed that that conference you have. I hope you have more of them.
Yeah, that was fun. Yeah, we're planning our next one. It's hard to get people to do it. The conferences have been great. And you know what's been interesting is that the picks on – everybody's picks have gone up, I think maybe with one or two exceptions. But if you look at it – and have beaten the S&P. So if you look at it as an investment, I mean, you got a huge bump just from – you know, if you had just invested in the ideas that were presented there. So it's definitely a compelling thing. And you know, I think we have something, but we just have to get the right people to do it. And so, yeah, but we're tentatively planning something for late in July. We're just trying to hunt down a kind of a VIP like headliner to anchor the whole thing. Yeah. You know, like a short seller along the lines of a Muddy Waters or some of the other ones that presented in the past.
But well, I enjoyed being a part of it. I thought it was cool. A really good conference. And
yeah, it was great having you too. Yeah, and the very interesting ideas. And like I mentioned, those presentations are up there too. And I think those stocks have done well, right? MSGS and MSG.
Yeah,
it's been a short time, and it's not.
It's a short time, but they. I think they. I don't remember what they were when we presented them. But it's been such a crazy market.
It really has. Well, we'll just have to see what happens. I think that's a nice way of closing, though. Jonathan Boyer, thank you so much for coming on the show. And thank you all for listening. We look forward to speaking to you all again next time.
Thank you for listening to the Contrarian Investor Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode. To subscribe to this podcast, simply open your favorite podcast software and search for Contrarian Investor. Follow us on social media by searching for Contrarian Investor on Twitter and Instagram. Send us your thoughts on feedback@contrarianpod.com. We look forward to speaking to you again next time.
Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.